is the Gazer update for June 24th, 2018. I'm Filippo D'Onofo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Chris Elogi.
And I'm Dan Red Victorio.
And we're definitely in the summer doldrums. You can tell because it's hot and there are no games coming out. So, yeah.
We're kind of struggling to fill the void, as it were.
Yeah, well, what we lack in releases, we definitely make up for in ancillary stories, so we'll be getting to some of those in a bit. But yeah, quick programming note for everybody. Next week, there will not be a show, because I can't guarantee that I'm going to actually have internet in time. So we'll just say we're not going to have one, and if turns out that I end up getting internet in time, well, hey, surprise in the feed. So there.
Yeah.
Just
we're also that. just to repeat, we're also not going to have a Let's Weekend next week either, because Phil's may not have his internet set up, and I'm going to be out of town. So
yeah. So yeah, we'll be podcast will probably be dark for this week, but yeah, they'll resume next.
Considering week. The news cycle. At least as far as games go, we'll be in a similar state. It's convenient enough.
Yeah. So that's the programming note out of the way, and then we'll get to our what we've been actually playing this week. And since I've been playing the Sega Genesis Collection, I kind of, you know, I've been working on the Shining Force games. Well, the first one in particular, which got me kind of interested in actually just going through the entire series. So I've been looking to acquire those. Well, 1 and 2 I already have. Shining in the Darkness I already have, because they're all on the Genesis Collection. But that leaves me with the Saturn and PS2 and all the other ones to figure out how to get. Saturn ones, well, yeah, Shining Force 3, kind of expensive. So yeah. Like, ROMs are pretty much your only option.
And plus, they didn't even release them all over here, so.
Yeah. Thankfully, there is actually a translation patch for Scenario 2 and 3. And actually, Scenario 1, the translation patch also improves Scenario 1, so...
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Just gotta figure out how to get a Saturn emulator working. Mednafan is kind of a command line emulator, so I gotta find a front end for that.
Yeah, it's very, It's like construction, really. It's very DIY.
Yeah. On the other hand, the Mednafan Saturn core is actually the best out there right now. It's the most compatible. It's just, you kind of need a beefy PC to use it. That's not really an issue for me. But, yeah, it's basically just the setup, getting that all going. And, well, I figure by the time I get around to that, you know, it's probably going to be a couple of releases anyway. So. So yeah, that's kind of been it. One other thing I will point out about Shining Force is, holy crap, can that game get infuriating at times. It's like, yeah, move your main character one square a little bit too far that you shouldn't have, and you get just, you know, reamed up the ass.
Murdered.
Yeah. And it's like, I love how the AI will, like, just randomly get double attacks right when your character can't afford to take one.
Yep. You know what I can't wait for, though?
Yeah.
If they ever actually properly bring back Shining Force, and all these Fire Emblem players who have no idea what they're getting into keep all their forces bunched together.
Yes, you don't want to do that in Shining Force. Yeah, Bolt 3 with a 3-square radius. Yeah, not good.
Yeah. That's just when you reset the system.
Yeah, it's like, oh, fuck. Yeah. One thing, I've been playing the entire game not realizing that a couple of my characters had items with spells attached to them. Like, oh, that would have been nice to know.
It's a thing.
Yeah, it's a thing that they don't bother to mention anywhere.
At all.
Ever, yeah.
Yeah, so I had to go online and figure that out, and it's like, well, damn, that's gonna make things a little bit easier, because even if you use an item that has a spell attached to it, you still get experience, unlike using a healing item, which doesn't give you experience. So, So basically that turns my main character into a fighter mage, and it turns my one of my knights into a knight mage. So that's a good thing.
Yes.
Now I can do damage on several fronts. So, yeah, now that I know that, well, that's going to help me going into Shining Force 2 and 3 and whatever else.
And just how fucking good is that series all around? Like,
yeah, it's great. It's like, I will say that it isn't the most particularly well-written dialogue I've ever seen, but this was, you know, old-style Sega localization. You know, I'm sure if they did it again now, it probably would be a lot more compelling. The Game Boy Advance version I actually want to check out, because apparently that's a different localization. So, I may want to get into that.
I have it. I just didn't know that it was a different localization.
Yeah, apparently it is. So,
but it makes sense, because when it was in development, they were touting it as a remake.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to playing that first game all over again.
Yeah, Camelot has always been damn good.
Yeah. So, that's kind of been my week. So how about you, Pat?
Fighting games mostly, and some Horizon Chase Turbo, because I just cannot put that game down.
It's a joy to play, isn't it?
It really is. But, yeah, Street Fighter 30th Anniversary, BlazBlue Cross Tag Battle since Yang and the second and third character packs came out the other day. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of been what I've been focused on, but... just really looking forward to being on the other side of Evo, so we can get the rest of those character packs. Because I think with 2-on-2, I think a modest sized roster can work. But
it is a little slim right now.
Yeah, I was just mainly just going to say that this is the kind of game that can. They can afford to have a larger roster, despite just being a 2-on-2 style game.
Yeah, yeah. With the design choices that they made up front and standardizing move sets, you can put as many characters in there, and people will be able to pick them up pretty quickly because they did that work up on the front end. So,
it's been my week.
All right, pretty much Kingdom Hearts.
All of the Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah, I've got the Kingdom Hearts 1.5 plus 2.5 collection, which has the remasters of both main Kingdom Hearts games, remasters of Chain of Memories, Birth by Sleep, that game with the weird number sequence that I can't remember, and Recoded. And it's also got a... I think I haven't been able to find it, but I'm pretty sure it's got stuff from Dream Drop Distance in there, too. I've basically been playing Birth by Sleep, mostly, and because I never got a chance to play that because it was on, the PSP.
Yeah.
And it's good. It's also hard as balls, and I've been playing because, the game is divided up into three different storylines. All of them, you get do them, and then they all have their own ending, and then you keep them, and then you get a final episode at the end, And I'm currently playing Terra. I'm literally at the last boss for Terra's storyline, and it's been basically confounding me for the last couple nights, because I simply cannot beat him. He is lightning fast. His attacks can be very hard to block. And the thing is, he's one of those bosses that has an extra long 10-hit combo. If he manages to hit you with one hit, you basically can't block the rest of them. It's difficult. Very, very difficult. But it's still... it's Kingdom Hearts. I loved it as a kid, and I still love it now. I will say this, though. With the HD graphics, you do start to see sort of the graphical limitations of the PS2 era. Specifically how, like, they would have characters with, like, full animate, like, full facial animations. And then the ones where they just have the repeating mouth movements. You know, the generic ones. And, yet still have, like, fully voiced dialogue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But yeah, it's still good stuff. So, yeah, that's what I've been doing. So what about you, Chris?
Yeah, so I've been playing a number of things that are on the Switch, particularly Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle, which I just got from Gamefly the other day. And that has been quite good. Definitely a good sort of take on the turn-based strategy RPG kind of game. But with Mario and the various Rabbids. And it's... I did not really expect the opening cutscene and the way that they set this whole thing up, which is that there's some... I guess she's like a teenage girl that has come up with this sort of VR technology that can combine two things. And as she steps out of the room, the Rabbids in their washing machine, time machine sort of thing, pops in, and they just start going nuts all over the room. One of them happens upon the VR helmet, puts it on, and realizes what it can do, and all chaos ensues. They get sucked. He sort of saps the time machine, and they all get sucked back in and whisked off to another place, which ends up being the Mushroom Kingdom. And even goes so far as he zaps himself and merges with the helmet and kind of just starts merging the Rabbids and various other things all the time. So that, like, a lot of the early, like, punk looking, like, Mad Max Rabbids are just combined with like paintbrushes. It's like their mohawks are actually like paint bristles, and their sort of face paint is just regular paint and all that sort of stuff. I assume it'll keep going, but I've just gotten to the part where I've opened things up, got back to the Peach's Castle, and can start going to some other stuff and upgrading weapons and all that sort of stuff. But so far it's been pretty good. I'm looking forward to putting some more time into it.
That game's been on sale like quite a few times at Best Buy and Amazon, so
I managed to get
that game yet. Definitely grab that.
I managed to get it off of Gamefly for about $18. So it was a nice deal. And another game I picked up, Hollow Knight. New game on the Switch. It's very much a Metroid-style game. It has some interesting things to it where initially you do not have a map. So it's not like auto-mapping stuff as you explore. You kind of have to go find this map maker and buy a map of the current area that you're in to get that. And then even then, you don't have like an icon showing where you're at on the map and where like different notable areas are. Things like the benches that you save on. There's like a bug train that you can get on to sort of warp around to different areas. Vendors, that sort of stuff. Those are things you have to kind of go back to like the starting area to the mapmaker's wife, and she is selling these upgrades. Luckily, it's not an expensive upgrade for them. They're most like 100 coins, and you can get that pretty easily because enemies will drop them, and they respawn in every chunk of area every time you come back. So you're not really wanting for coins too much at that point. But the combat is quite hard initially. I've been starting to get used to it, and I still don't even have really any of the upgraded abilities or anything like that. I assume there's going to be like a double jump, some sort of like speed boost sort of thing, and a couple others, and I don't have those yet. But I managed to take down a big boss. At least I thought it was a big boss. And basically just kind of had to you know, jump in, get attack in, jump back out, watch out for, he does like a ground stomp that sends out waves at you, that sort of stuff. I managed to beat it and didn't really get anything out of it, but some coins. The way they handle health is actually pretty interesting as well, because you got this meter that sort of fills up with this juice, I guess. And as you take damage, you can sort of hold in the A button and just refill your health from that juice. So as long as you're taking down enemies, you have enough of this juice to at least give yourself, you know, one or two extra hearts. And yeah, the story is kind of neat so far. You're kind of going down to this underground area that the other inhabitants of this kingdom town, I forget what they would call it, but they've gone down to sort of mine for money and search for riches, and that has sort of corrupted them. So you're kind of going down there to find out what's happening, stop whatever is going on that is evil, I guess.
Mm.
I have not gotten far enough where it's really any sort of big bad has unveiled themselves yet, but that's been a fun time so far. And I've also been playing some Blossom Tales. This game is very much Link to the Past, but kind of with the story framework of Princess Bride.
Mm.
There, it starts off with a grandfather sort of telling a story to his granddaughter and son. And along the way, as you're going through the story, you'll see them chime in like, oh, what do these things do? And I actually got to this first dungeon area that you have to go to, and they actually give you a choice of what the enemies are going to be. And I was given the choice of, I think, giant rock monsters or archers, and I think I chose the rock monsters. But what it does really well is it plays pretty well. It takes some inspiration from A Link Between Worlds, where you do not have like set amounts of bombs or things like that. You just have this sort of magic meter that just limits how much you can use of them in a quick amount of time. So right now I have a shovel to dig up treasure. I have bombs that I can throw, which those are what you need for the rock monsters. Now you can just sort of throw them at them. It'll explode upon impact and that sort of stuff. It controls pretty well. It looks pretty good. So far it's been pretty solid. It was on sale during the E3 sale. And so I'm glad I picked that up. And that's been kind of it. How about you, Dan Rib?
Yeah, I've primarily been playing a puzzle game that I can't talk about until Tuesday, so we'll leave it at that. And I'm also playing Mario Tennis Aces. I haven't gotten that far yet, primarily because I've primarily been playing with friends and not the story mode. But the story mode is actually one of the things that drove me to get the game. But you also have to realize it's a Mario Sports story. From what's happened so far, there's an enchanted tennis racket that infected the minds of Wario and Waluigi, and I got to help them because Mario does that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's like, but, there's no option to like just not ignore, just completely ignore them. No, doesn't.
Yeah, no. But the stuff that they have me do in the single player mode are actually pretty cool. If any of you tried out the demo, you end up getting Mario's classic outfit that he can wear to tennis matches. But he looks pretty cool in his actual tennis outfit. You know, you get to see everyone's different comb-overs and hairstyles with the visors on. It's really weird seeing like all these Mario characters dressed up in like different and cool things. So that's always been part of its style. But yeah, as for like what I've been doing in the story mode, there's one point in the game where there's these panels falling on this cliff wall, and you actually have to aim your ball at these little panels. So it just goes to show how much control you actually have over your ball. Like, you can do your regular hits, you can do your backhands, you can do slices. There's also these super moves that you can use by slowing down time by holding R and then using another button to just deliver all these shots. And they're pretty crazy. You can just decide to hit them away from your opponent. You can hit them at your opponent and, like, hopefully they miss and get hit as a result. But you can also break their rackets, which would end the game for them. So there's a whole lot of deep thought into this game, and it's really surprising. Granted, I haven't really played a Mario Tennis game since it came out on the N64, so it's a really different experience. But I'm really enjoying it. And, you know, if Nintendo is able to get this much value out of a tennis game, I can only wonder how the rest of their sports lineup will be, because this is really good. But
I'm kind of surprised that Nintendo hasn't gone back to football.
Well, wasn't there Mario Strikers?
Yeah.
Soccer, but I mean, you know, American football.
It's, yeah. Oh, American football.
I don't know how it would work, but I would be intrigued.
I'm going to take a guess. The reason they haven't done that is because American football is extremely specific to
America.
Yeah. So, I mean, soccer would be something that most people in the world could enjoy. Yeah.
If they were to take a step into that direction, I'd see about hiring up as many people who worked on Blitz as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. I do want them to bring back Mario Strikers, though.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That was good.
There hasn't been a bad Strikers game, and plus, like, that game has a lot of attitude, from what I remember.
Yeah, it does. It's all art direction is very, a bit more, I guess, I don't want to use, I hate using this phrase, edgier than normal. It's got a bit more,
cross chops and shit.
Yeah, it's got, awesome. Like, kind of a, sort of a Thunderdome, cyberpunk-ish edge to it, and, also, you got to see the Mario princesses in probably the most revealing outfits they've ever had in the franchise.
Yeah.
But, I really want to see them go there. Wasn't that also the game, though, where, like, one of the, I think either it was Luigi or Yoshi had, like, a body slam that they did that they had to take out of the game because they thought it was too violent?
I think it might have been Wario.
It could have been.
Yeah, it was Wario.
But yeah, I mean, my favorite has always been Mario Golf, so I can't wait till they decide to do one of those, especially with how good Golf Story turned out. So
yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, Mario Tennis Aces is a whole lot of fun.
Yeah. All right.
That's it for me.
Okay. So let's get on to the show itself. Quick note here. Well, I don't know how quick this is going to be, because I do have a little bit to say on this. We got a delay announcement from Piranha Games. They're currently working on MechWarrior 5 Mercenaries.
Mm-hmm.
That game has just slipped into 2019. They haven't specified how far into 2019, as it was already slated for December.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be as short as a month. It could be 3 months. It could be half a year. We don't know. They're going to announce more details at this year's MechCon in December 7th in Vancouver, so we'll get more info on what's going on there. My personal take on it is because they just settled with Harmony Gold over that whole mech design licenses that Harmony Gold may or may not have actually had the rights to pursue,
mm-hmm.
That's a topic for an entirely different thing. But anyway, what I think is probably going to happen is the devs there are probably going to take some time and focus on actually bringing in the Unseen. And for those who don't know, those are the mechs that look an awful lot like the ones from Robotech, but they're also the majority of the light and medium class mechs. So that would be
also
big...
the fact that, you know, Robotech is itself not an original property in the slightest.
No, it wasn't and still isn't. But so if they take the time and bring in those mechs from the Unseen, that's going to flesh out the early going game, which if given the fact that you're, you know, building a mech company, mercenary company, that would be kind of the kind of class mechs that you would have access to initially anyway. So it would make a lot of sense that, yeah, they might take some time to actually, you know, flesh out that lineup so you actually have more choices to work with. So that's my thoughts on that. I've looked at what they're doing with this game, and it looks phenomenal. If you haven't had a chance to look at what this game is doing, it's just crazy good. It's like you can you have enough control over your firing that you can actually tattoo your initials with a laser beam on your opponent's mech. some really good
stuff. That's a thing.
Yeah, that's a thing now. Because, yeah, you know, lasers, heat, explosions, good stuff. So, moving on. We got a couple of announcements from Three Fields. For those of you who don't know, they're the ones who originally created Burnout. Formerly Criterion, now Three Fields. So they're bringing in two new games. The first one that they're going to work on is Danger Zone 2. Well, you know, just kind of an expansion of what they started with the original Danger Zone.
Yep.
Although this one is going to be going, you know, outside, not just stuck in a crash test field, so.
Yep. So that'll be nice to see.
Yeah. It's like bringing in more of that Burnout Revenge-style crash mode where you have all kinds of setups from highways to overpasses to all that kind of fun stuff. So that's going to be cool. The other one, they're calling Dangerous Driving, and they're describing it as an arcade racer with boosts, takedowns, and the biggest crashes they've ever done. So, yeah, it's Burnout Revenge.
Yep.
Sounds
good to me.
Yeah. Closed circuits, too. That's what they were very, specific on that.
Okay.
God,
I miss big arcade racers. I really do. Like, actually in the arcades.
Yeah. There are some pretty good ones. I mean, Raw Thrills is still making some nice ones, but...
Any Daytona 3s out there?
Yeah.
You know
what I really miss? I don't know if any of you guys ever played this, because they used to have this, like, all... The local mall, when they had an arcade, they had this game in there for years. It was a Japanese game, and it was like these two dudes that were in a car, and somebody would shoot out the windshield, and so
Lucky you had Wild.
That's what it was?
Yep. I remember it very well, because I spent a lot of quarters in it.
I put so many tokens into that thing.
Yeah.
God, I missed that game so much.
Yeah, so they announced July is when Danger Zone 2 is going to be out, PS4, PC, and Xbox One. Mm-hmm. Dangerous Driving is winter 2018.
Yep, and I'm buying both of those. I'm pretty much, sold on everything Three Fields has been doing. Because Dangerous Golf was, it was kind of like a proof of concept type thing for their tech, basically, just to make sure it worked. It was also completely ridiculous, so that was great. So what else we got here? Oh, we got a release date for Valkyria Chronicles 4.
Thank God, finally.
Yep.
Yep, and I will be buying it.
Yeah, there's far too much coming out in September.
Yeah,
you really think, we always talk about the summer doldrums. Game developers, it doesn't have to be the summer doldrums. You could totally start releasing some of your stuff in summer. We would be okay with that.
Yeah, I feel this is going to stick for the same fate as the original game, which came out in October and sold fine.
Uh-huh.
But... obviously not well enough to keep it on consoles.
Yeah. This is actually the second Valkyria Chronicles game to be on consoles.
This first one has four platforms it's releasing on, so that will be hopefully a good boost.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess if you pre-order this launch edition, you get a controller skin featuring the medic dog.
Yeah.
Which on the, let's see, the Switch is a little Joy-Con controller thing that you hook them into.
Yeah.
It kind of puts the right stick where his dong is. I've seen people notice this.
Well,
whoops.
Hello, DeviantArt.
Yeah.
But yes, I am totally buying this when it comes out. Or maybe I won't have to if a certain someone can get me a review code.
Yeah, we
maybe it's possible. We have a pretty good relationship with them, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I will notice that Sega didn't provide us with a review code for Sega Genesis Classics, and
now we know why.
So that was a thing. But anyways,
I recommend anybody who has not had a chance to play the original Valkyria Chronicles. I mean, it's on PC now.
PC if and you PS4, get PS4,
yeah,
it's pretty cheap most of the time,
and it's definitely worth playing. Yeah. It is unbelievable. It is one of the most fun strategy, I guess technically a strategy RPG that you will ever, a simulation RPG that you'll ever play.
It should have revolutionized the genre, but the genre died right after on consoles.
Yeah. I mean, it basically, you know, I mean, technically we're supposed to be getting a proper Fire Emblem game on the Switch at some point, but so the original Valkyria Chronicles, it's probably the closest that a Japanese game developer ever will be to having a game taking place in World War II, you know, outside of 1941.
Yeah.
And, it is so very clearly supposed to be an allegory for World War II. You've got the, you've basically got the persecuted minority. You've got the weird, like the aristocratic sort of social Darwinist fascist empire encroaching in on a small European town. One of the battles is just straight up an anime version of storming the beaches at Normandy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not quite as epic as the beaches of Normandy was, but, you're going up into a beach against a bunch of machine gun nests and pillboxes. And bonkers. It's pretty obvious what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Has some serious tear jerkers as well. Anyone who has played that game knows exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, there's a gap in the series on the PS4, though, so that's going to be weird if you want to actually play all of them.
Yeah, well, they don't really all necessarily relate to each other.
Okay.
I mean, they mostly all take place in the same conflict, but in, like, different parts of it at different time periods, so.
Good to know. Okay, so 2 days after that, Life is Strange Life is Strange 2, Episode 1, comes out 2 days after that, so September 27th.
Yep.
Everybody
we still
is,
know nothing about it.
Yeah. Everybody is preloading their releases in, like, late September or November. They seem to be avoiding October like the plague at this point. I wonder why.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is going to be Episode 1. They said they're going to release some more information on Season 2 in August. And they'll have pre-orders up for Season 2, starting with the release of Captain Spirit, the Amazing Adventure of Captain Spirit, or Awesome Adventure, whatever it's called. That releases on Tuesday, so that's when pre-orders will go live for the Season 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just not really a whole heck of a lot to be able to say, because they haven't said much about it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Comes out soon, so all our questions will be answered then.
Mm-hmm.
Basically. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that Cat and Spirit game, though. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a graphic adventure game.
Yep. Looks quite nice.
And it's free to play, so.
Yep.
Yeah. It's using the drug dealer business model,
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, first hit's free, and then they want you to buy season two.
And apparently what you end up doing in the game will actually carry over into Life is Strange season two. So
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I'm interested in seeing how that works out, because Life is Strange 1 ended in the worst possible way to split things up. So
yeah. Well, I mean, one of them only had, like, an actual complete ending. Mm-hmm. The other was just kind of...
If we do this, maybe this will happen.
Yeah.
Mm. All right, so, yeah, keep your eyes on that. In other news, we've got Sony has announced the PlayStation Hits program. This is effectively the return of Greatest Hits titles.
Yep. Yeah.
Took them long enough. Mm.
And $20 for each of these games. There's 15 here. Bloodborne, Drive Club, Infamous Second Son, Killzone, Shadowfall, Little Big Planet 3, Ratchet and Clank, The Last of Us Remastered, Uncharted 4, Battlefield 4, Doom, Project Cars, Street Fighter 5, Yakuza Kiwami, Yakuza 0, and Metal Gear Solid 5. I think it's the definitive edition.
Yeah, Yakuza 0 and Yakuza Kiwami.
Yeah. And, yeah, a lot of these were already $20 at retail on PSN.
Yeah.
Just through normal price drops. But this will sort of bring them back out into retail and make them a little bit more noticeable as, you know, hey, these games are probably pretty good.
Yeah.
And I was glad I did not buy Yakuza 0 in the recent E3 sale for $18.
Yeah.
It went from being a 70% discount to 10% in a matter of a couple days.
God damn it, Sony.
Yeah. Well, this is a good thing in general, I think. Yeah. You know,
well, so it means games, people are playing this game, so that's great.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, somebody who like wouldn't have played but Bloodborne at $60, but you know, might see it there at 20, is like, you know, for $20 I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, I think they could have capitalized on this a little bit more by having like Bloodborne include the DLC with it as like a little complete edition. Like Drive Club could do the same thing, Killzone could do that, a couple of these others that have DLC. That would have been nice as like a ribbon on the, you know, bow on the package.
Yeah, that is one caveat that's worth mentioning.
Yeah. Also, a bunch of these games have been free before.
A few of them for PS Plus. Yeah.
Yeah. So, still cool. I mean, for $20, I probably actually would pick up Doom just to have a physical copy of it. So, yeah.
15 and a half, it's fine.
Yeah. Anyways. So, we got another Minecraft ad came out recently.
Mm-hmm.
This one for Minecraft on the Switch, which is touting cross-console play.
Yeah, and kind of makes Sony look out to be a bunch of bitches.
Yeah, they never mention Sony, because obviously they can't, because you can't play cross-console on the PlayStation 4.
Yep.
I knew this was going to happen as soon as cross-console play started to become a thing.
Mm-hmm.
We were going to start seeing companies actually start pushing that as an advantage.
Yep.
Yeah, the whole only on PlayStation thing now starts to look a little bit, you know, weak.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask me, because why would you buy the PlayStation 4 version of Minecraft that limits you to only on PlayStation 4 and delays your downloadable content when you can get the Switch or the Xbox One version and whatever your friends happen to have, well, they can play it too with you.
Yep.
So, I expect games like Fortnite will probably start touting this as well. This is gonna become a thing, whether Sony wants it or not. They'll probably end up being dragged, kicking and screaming into this.
Yeah.
I mean, when it comes to the point where Nintendo and Xbox are buddy-buddy on Twitter.
Co-advertising. Yeah. let's call it what it is.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. I also loved the the entire you know, red and green color scheme that that ad was doing. Yeah. It's like blue is conspicuously absent.
Yeah.
Survive alone.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Good luck with that. So, yeah. It's just, this is great advertising because it calls out your competition without actually ever calling them out.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a few years ago, if you thought Sony with their, it wasn't even an ad, the thing of Shuhei just sharing a game with another person, if you thought that was bad, this is just, this is next level stuff now.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So, good stuff. So moving on, we got, what else do we have here? Oh, yeah, Bethesda is suing Warner Brothers over their Westworld mobile game, I believe, which is apparently a ripoff of Fallout Shelter.
Yeah,
and it's kind of not very transparent about it.
Yeah. They are fucked.
Yeah, because the developer of the Westworld game, Behavior Interactive, also worked on Fallout Shelter early on. And so they're alleging that they are actually using some of the same code for this game, this new game.
I would not be surprised.
And Kotaku rightly points out that one of their articles pointing out this similarity is cited in this lawsuit, which, if you remember, Bethesda has Kotaku on a blacklist.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't respond to them or send them codes or anything like that.
No, but that's so the codes to anybody. So,
yeah, well, that's particularly to Kotaku, yeah. They do not
don't
do anything with them.
Nope,
they don't invite them to any events or anything like that. So, yeah, there's lots of screenshots showing, like, you know, character shading is similar. Let's see, some of the control stuff is the same, similar as like. You zoom after double tap. Let's see what else here. Character locations are kind of similar. I don't know. Like that, where they stand is similar. I don't know. Some of the stuff seems really granular, but it'll be interesting to see how this plays out in actual court.
Yeah. The tricky thing is to convince the court that there is a fundamental similarity between the two games. That shouldn't be very difficult to do, given just how incredibly similar these two things look. But reusing code in itself is not illegal. It is a practice that a lot of developers do. Because, you know, why would you rebuild the entire thing, you know, twice when you've already done the work once? So there's that.
Yeah, I think it's mentioning here that Bethesda claims that Behavior signed in their agreement that any code, design, artwork, layouts, and other assets and materials for Fallout Shelter were authored and owned by Bethesda as works made for hire.
Okay, so if that's actually the case, then yeah, Warner Brothers has an uphill case. Yeah. That's not good.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mega, if you look at the screenshots that they're comparing, it really does look like Fallout Shelter.
Yeah, that's definitely what they were interested in, sort of making a game similar to that.
Yeah, I mean, you can make a game that's similar without ripping it off completely, which...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they could have gone with a different artist, at the very least.
Yep. Yeah. But they chose not to. Yeah, good luck, Warner Brothers. They're having a whole hell of a lot of trouble with their mobile games these days, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's like from that god-awful Harry Potter game to this, they've got, maybe they should look into hiring better mobile developers.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least not hiring the same ones Bethesda did.
Yeah, just,
I wonder what their end game even was, because obviously Westworld's a hell of an IP, but Fallout Shelter doesn't make much money at all. So, I don't know.
No, I can't imagine that Fallout Shelter is a huge revenue earner for Bethesda. You know, for them, I think it's just kind of one of those things that they made just for fun. You know, it helps the Fallout brand. It keeps it in people's minds. So I think that's probably what Warner Brothers wanted with Westworld game to have something for people to do after the season 2 was done, because, you know, that's going to be ending fairly soon anyway. So.
Yep.
Yeah. I need to get into that again, because got to catch up. What else we got? Oh, yeah. Gaming disorder is now a thing, according to the World Health Organization.
Yeah. Of course, and this is important to point out, what they have that describes it is typically stuff that is far, far beyond what the average gamer does.
Yeah.
It's a very, this is like the type of person that'll stay, you know, on an MMORPG, sit in their chair for like days at a time.
Yeah.
You know, which is totally something that's happened. So... Yeah.
People have died from this.
Dropping dead in a Korean game center after a week of solid play.
Yeah, that was like that.
And very much similar to like addiction in general.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I frankly think this is, you know, totally, totally natural. There are many things that can be addictive and considered a disorder. You know, eating is a disorder. Gambling is a disorder. Fucking is a disorder. When taken to excess, of course.
Mm-hmm.
It's the reason that gaming would be as well. You know, this does not, you know, this does not correlate playing video games to violent behavior, which is what some people have actually tried to pin. I'm not sure how they made it to that leap, but whatever. The good news is that with this classification, it means that people who do suffer from this may actually be able to get insurance coverage before it. So, you know, good all around.
Yeah.
Except for the fact that, you know, the American health insurance sucks. So.
Yeah, because, you know, unlike most other civilized nations, we have to buy ours.
Yeah, so good luck with that. Anyone have thoughts on this?
I always love looking at the images they include in these sorts of articles. I think one here includes a... It has to be like an... Not an Ouya, but like the... An Ouya-style console thing.
Yeah.
Because it's definitely not any of the mainstream ones.
Yeah.
And they also have a picture of some teens with their phones. And they look like... phones from like 15 years ago. Like their
photography.
Like with the keyboard that slides out, that sort of stuff.
Wow.
It's like, okay, guys, get your images from this decade at least.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
So. No, I just worry that it'll further continue to stigmatize being a hardcore gamer.
Well, you know, frankly, I think that the hardcore gamers are doing more for that than this would ever do.
Yeah.
It depends on your definition, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, you know, hardcore gamer for us is somebody who generally appreciates games of all kinds and is very dedicated to playing them. For a lot of people, hardcore gamer is somebody who plays Call of Duty exclusively.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, my main thing is, it says here, a diagnosis of gaming disorder then means that a persistent or recurrent behavior pattern of sufficient severity has emerged, according to the ICD. You can say that about anything, like we went over earlier. Like, anything that people have a more than a vested interest in can turn into a disorder with this kind of knowledge. So, yeah, that's my thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's true. It can. But, you know, to be able to treat something, you first have to acknowledge it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
it's kind of one of those things. You know, for some people, this really is a big problem. I have seen kids who just can't live without their phones, and they're always, you know, playing. They're always playing something. They're not, they're not chatting. They're not doing anything other than playing whatever whatever game happens to be hot at the time.
Yeah.
Well, it's good, and I think it's good for the most part. It's
just
one of those things like, yeah, we'll have to wait and see how this gets received. So, anyways. In other news, psychologists are urging politicians to maybe have a look at guns.
So just specifically what this article is referencing is, the American sort of commission that we've put together to look at the problems of mass shootings and school violence, school shootings specifically. And, the problem is they specifically are doing everything possible to not look into guns. And these two psychologists they had, both of whom have opposing opinions on whether or not media has an effect on such things, basically were in agreement. It's like, no, you guys really do need to look into the gun issue.
Yeah, that's what I thought was really telling about this. It's like... even the psychologists who are looking at violence in games, both of whom have, well, one of whom is basing their opinion on studies that was done in 1977 on Charlie's Angels, and one who's a little bit more modern, are both going, maybe if people didn't have access to guns so easily, it might lead to less shootings. Just saying.
And apparently, like, during the course of these commissions where they've interviewed people, there's been at least one recorded instance where the speaker might be going into more detail about the gun issue. And then the head of this commission, who also just happens to be Betsy DeVos, will basically cut them off because of time.
Or so she says. Yeah, they're really doing everything they can to just completely ignore it and try to pin it on something that it isn't.
And they're really not doing a very good job either, because...
No, not when the people they have trying to investigate it are, like, not having it.
No.
the world we live in.
No, the world that we, specifically Americans, live in.
Yeah. Yeah, I just thought I'd bring this up because it does bear updating people on what's been going on. Sadly, school shootings still a problem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Will continue to be until something happens.
Yep.
And finally, not quite finally, but almost finally. We're probably heading into a new console generation within the next few years. The question is, based on the fact that all of the companies, Ubisoft, EA, Microsoft, Sony, they're all looking at streaming technologies, we're starting to wonder whether or not streaming is actually the future for gaming as a whole. Let's open that up for discussion.
I mean, Ubisoft has basically said that they only expect really one more console generation. But then again, people have been saying that for, 10, 15 years now? So, is streaming the future? It might be. The thing is that I honestly can't – until – we have, accessible Wi-Fi to the majority of the world, I don't think streaming's really going to become the supreme thing completely overtake physical releases. Mm. And that's the reason why. Because... Yeah. Unless you have good enough internet that you can actually stream games without too much issues, you're basically forced to use physical releases.
Mm-hmm. And this is also one of the
one of the aspects that we kind of won when we raked Microsoft over the coals when the Xbox One was first unveiled.
Mm-hmm.
I think if the 180 hadn't happened, then this was certainly something that would be on the table. But people spoke out in droves that they will protect their digital rights.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I think streaming will continue to be a choice for people, an option, and it should be. It's a good option. But there's no way that it should ever become the exclusive means of content delivery.
Yeah,
there
are
just
definitely
too many. There are too many weaknesses to it.
Yeah, I definitely see that being case for a good while, where it'll just be more focused on digital than mm-hmm. maybe retail, and streaming will be just an option that just grows as the tech grows, which is definitely interesting. People are like, oh yeah, streaming. That's something people should be doing. It's like, Sony's been doing it for 4 years now.
Mm-hmm.
You guys, it works pretty well. It's not perfect yet. And that's just kind of also just a factor of the type of games that are on it. Because I think as streaming gets better, the games that are going to be on there are going to be better suited towards the kind of lag and such that that entails.
Because mm-hmm.
you're trying to, you know, retrofit these, you know, fighting games and shooters and such.
You're never going to be playing Street Fighter over these.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Not in any sort of competitive way, but yeah, they're going to have to be games that are better suited to that sort of variable lag that, you know, just retrofitting old games onto it is not always going to work that well. There are going to be plenty of games that do work that well, But yeah, you're definitely going to have some problems just retrofitting old stuff onto it. And yeah, I think digital is just going to be the thing that's going to become more of a focus as, you know, that keeps doing so well. Like, I think recently, like, there were studies saying, like, oh, 2/3 of people still buy retail. It's like, that's still 1/3 of people that just go straight to digital for any games they want.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's, you think about where we started off last gen, the PSP didn't have a digital store. The DS didn't have a digital store.
Mm-mm.
You know, the what was on the PS3 and Xbox 360 was not where it was even 3 or 4 years later, where you started seeing retail stuff coming onto it and the digital offerings being much bigger than the simple sort of arcade-style things that were there around launch. The Wii is the only one that didn't really grow at all. That's just because they kind of limited their stuff up front to being mostly virtual console, and the WiiWare stuff did some nice things, but they just did not know what the digital marketplace was going to be. But yeah, I think, yeah, we're going to keep going with digital as it gets better. Its ability to play a lot faster after you start downloading gets better, and just the experience just gets a lot better.
Yeah, there's a thing. There's this company that's starting to do this kind of thing now, called Blade, and their product is called Shadow.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure if you've heard of this, but yeah, what it basically is I think it's about $25-$30 a month, and yes, that's high. But what it is you rent what amounts to a high-end PC.
Mm-hmm.
You get your own Windows 10 desktop. You log into it. You set it up any way you want. And you stream your own games from your own Steam library to any device you want.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course, as you keep paying the subscription, and as the tech matures, you keep they keep upgrading their systems. I have no idea how they're going to continue to make money doing this. And therein is the fundamental issue with streaming as a whole, is the infrastructure required to sustain it. You want the latency, you know, physics, you can't really get around too much. We're doing a lot to try to mitigate that with client-side prediction technologies, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, the companies that are providing this service have to keep providing that service.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you're also at the mercy of your ISPs, which mm-hmm. in this country is a huge factor, especially mm-hmm. because it's such a huge country, just getting, you know, fiber put in the ground so that everybody could have, you know, gigabit speed. It's a huge undertaking that's really expensive, and even Google gave up on the idea of just getting these big, huge cities outfitted with fiber.
Yeah.
And it's like, if Google gives up on that, that's telling.
It's dark times.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think Google gave up on that because of the regulatory hurdles they had to go through.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, that's the one thing that this current FCC would actually has made better, is that they could get back into it now.
Yeah. But then the FCC could also just turn around and tell them no, just to spite the rest of us.
Yeah, which, you know, given Ajit Pai's yeah. wishy-washiness, I wouldn't be too surprised about. So.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, streaming is going to be an interesting thing to look forward to. I like the idea of being able to just, you know, oh, I haven't played that game in a while, let's just play that. You know, so that's what PlayStation Now's subscription plan is basically offering.
Yeah.
But, you know, the video quality isn't there. There's input lag, you know. You feel it. And
yep.
one of the things that bothers me about people who keep saying that this is going to be the future is they've obviously never tried it.
Mm-hmm.
A game that you play streaming just doesn't feel right.
Mm-hmm. It's true. You
know, yeah, like there's especially
there's a huge reason why Xbox Game Pass is a whole lot more successful than PlayStation Now, because Xbox mm-hmm. Game Pass requires you to install the game onto your system before you can actually play it.
Yeah. Yep.
That's Phil mentioned the infrastructure a while ago, and that's also a huge part of it. I mean, you know, I can definitely see a future where we are streaming games well and on good services, but at the end of the day, the third parties are going to have to agree on a pricing model that actually works for everybody, themselves included. I mean, we already had Ubisoft and EA doing their things, but there are a whole bunch of third parties, there are a whole bunch of indies that don't do it, and they're going to want their stuff on their services, and they have to figure out what's fair for them as far as what to charge. And at the end of the day, you know, a lot of us have our Netflixes, we have our real bills, we have all our stuff like that. Like, there has to be some sort of cost-efficient way for us to fit gaming into yep. that as well. Yeah. And like, right now, it doesn't make any sense. And until all of these guys sit down and figure it out, I realistically don't see it happening in the near future.
Yeah, because we could end up looking at a future where there's like, you know, 30 different streaming services depending exactly. on what games you actually want to play. Yeah, we're already at that point with TV services.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I mean, like there's a service right now. It's not necessarily for streaming. It's for digital copies of movies you own.
Right.
Disney set up an initiative with 20th Century Fox and a whole bunch of other studios to have what's it called, Watch Anywhere or Movies Everywhere. Anywhere. Yeah. And that doesn't include. Who is it? It doesn't include the people that do the Hunger Games movies, Lionhead or what the fuck they're called.
Yeah, Lionsgate.
Like, I actually like Movies Anywhere, but the fact that I still don't have my entire library into one spot is like really annoying to me. So that's something that'll be even more annoying as far as gaming goes.
Yeah, yeah. This is really something that a platform holder would have to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't see it being viable if individual publishers are doing it. That's because, you know, they're gonna be fickle. If they're not making money, they're just gonna shut down the service, and then you lose access to all of those things. The same risk applies to platform holders, obviously, but they're a little bit more incented to keep things going because of all the other stuff that they've got going. Mm. I don't know. The really interesting thing is the PlayStation 5, which we're hearing rumors about. Yeah, apparently that GPU not as powerful as you would think it would be. So that's the whole argument for towards why the PlayStation 5 might be a streaming targeted console. So yeah, we'll wait and see. But yeah, I think whoever wrote this article, I can't scroll up. Anyways, I can find it. They're basically saying, yeah, you'll be able to play some games locally, but then the more demanding ones you'd have to stream. It's like, wait a minute. That just sounds like a clusterfuck waiting to happen. So, yeah. Let's not do that, guys. Please?
Yes.
Yeah.
We're asking nicely.
Yeah.
I'm also pretty interested in seeing how Resident Evil 7 does as far as the streaming game in Japan goes. I mean, I want to say most of the people in Japan play with their Switch as a handheld, and, you know, it's not mobile. You can't just, like, stream Resident Evil 7 anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, unless you have, like, a MiFi sort of setup.
Yeah.
You just have this mobile Wi-Fi hotspot set up so that you can attach your Switch to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people overseas actually do that, so it'd be interesting to see.
So I, you've burned through 40 gigabytes in 2 hours.
Yep.
yeah, good luck with that. Anyways. So our last news story of the week, which is a quick public service announcement. If you're a pinball arcade fan and you haven't picked up the Bally Midway tables, they're going away this week. This is your last chance to get them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, they put out a newsletter the other day, sort of laying out all the dates for this stuff. And for whatever reason, PS4, PSN in the U.S. is the 28th, not the 30th.
Hmm.
So those people need to get their stuff a little bit sooner by this Thursday. Otherwise, everybody else has until Saturday to get it. And I would assume just get it sooner rather than later. Don't wait until the 29th at, you know, 11:58 to buy it. Because most of these platform holders aren't going to sit here waiting for their phone to hit 12 o'clock or whatever time it's supposed to be specifically.
Yeah.
Yeah, you never know when those are going to go. So.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Check that out. And finally, we'll cap this discussion off with we'll talk about our favorite games of the year so far. It is mid-year. I figured it was worth checking in, and since it was a little bit of a slow week, we may as well go into it. Well, Pat and I both have two of the same. Two of the same games on there. Horizon Chase Turbo.
Yep.
I'm just going to say it. You know, prior to Horizon Chase Turbo, I was feeling a little bit down on gaming as a whole.
Yeah.
I've been doing the podcasts and all that fun stuff, but I wasn't playing a lot of games too much, you know? Then that game came out and reminded me why I played games in the first place.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, fantastic game from Aquarius. It is an absolute blast to play. And, if you don't have it on your PS4 yet, what the hell are you waiting for? Seriously, it is. It's just a breath of fresh air.
It is.
Phil's not kidding. He reviewed three of our last six games. That's fucking huge.
It's gaming in a very pure form.
Yeah. So, yeah. Along with that is one of the other games I did review, which was BlazBlue Crosstag Battle. I'm not huge into tag fighters, and this is one that I can even get into.
Yep.
This is a super stylish anime-style fighter. It brings in a bunch of different properties. Some of them are, a little less known than others, you know. But
it's definitely Ruby. Showing me that I've been sleeping on Undernight. I need to check that series out.
Yeah. Great gameplay, great art, great animation, fantastic soundtrack, as you should expect from Arc System Works.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely one of my favorite games. I'll be picking up that season pass very shortly. I also need to re-up from my PlayStation Plus because that just expired.
Ooh. That sucks.
Yeah. So, yeah, once I'm done moving, I'll get all that stuff sorted. So, how about you, Ben?
Going along with that Horizon Chase Turbo, again, basically it's emotional bribery in digital form. And I can just sit down and play that game for hours. I don't know why we don't have more games like this, because we should. It has definitely been a good mental de-stressor as I've been going through this whole moving process, and I just I seem to get a little bit of that game in every day, which is not something I can say very often. And then I'm going to kind of, calling this one a game of 2018 might be a bit of a stretch. It's Street Fighter 30th Anniversary Collection. But it is the first time that we've had proper Alpha 3 and proper Super Turbo online. Mm-hmm. And the online for Hyper Fighting is also much better than it was on the Xbox 360.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm going to say 30th Anniversary Collection. It's just, it is such a must-own for people who love Street Fighter or just want to know more about it. They stuck so much content into this game for you to enjoy, and I can't say enough about it. It's going to be one of the staples of my gaming for months and months, if not years, to come.
Yeah, it's not just the 12 games that are included on there too. It's that entire museum section.
Yes,
honestly, I think it's worth getting just for that. If you're a Street Fighter fan and you want as much info, and you can basically do things like go and look at the stepping of you know, a character's animations. You know, you go through and do that. There's making of in there. There's
the history soundtrack section.
Players. It's amazing.
The history section is tremendous.
Yeah. Great trivia too.
Yeah.
So, Chris, what about you?
Yeah, so I think God of War is so far the number one game for me. As a fan that has played all of the God of War games, this one really does a good job of honoring that legacy as well as doing new things. Not just being, oh, we just did that again, but now it's prettier. It's a new chapter for Kratos himself after, you know, finally putting to rest the demons that haunted him in that whole series of games before.
Yeah.
Moving on to a new life and kind of just wanting to be left alone with his family. And as is kind of his fate, I guess, that nobody will let him rest. So he kind of has to set out with his son to put their wife's corpse to rest. And along the way, they grow together as father and son. Atreus grows himself into a better fighter. And it's a really weird to be saying that God of War has like a better emotional story to it than many games that actually try to do that from the start. I don't think many people, if you told them, you know, 5 years ago, oh yeah, one of the most emotional stories of 2018 is going to be God of War. They would be like, oh yeah, sure. But yeah, that game just does a lot of cool stuff. As well as just gameplay wise, it's incorporated things from Dark Souls into it, but still keeping a lot of the traditional God of War stuff in there, while just being a very challenging game. And offering a lot of like side challenges and quests and such that are a little bit tougher. But if you want to sort of experience the breadth of what it offers, it does some really cool stuff there. As for games that I have played in the past that have gotten new life this year, Shadow of the Colossus is one of them. That game is one of my all-time favorites. and this version does that justice. It looks incredible. It plays really well. And it gets a new lease on life on the PS4 with just really well done new visuals. They've done a really good job with it, and I just want them to do Eco and sort of finish off the trilogy on the PS4. Yeah. And Burnout Paradise Remastered also gets on there. It won't make my year-end list, just because we have rules in place to keep sort of more straightforward ports out of it, but that game is kind of actually managed to put to rest the Burnout comparisons that Forza Horizon has gotten since it came back, or since it started.
Yeah.
Where it's like, this is kind of Burnout, but what it does is not really all that comparable to what Burnout Paradise did. That's a game that I can just keep going back and just putting lots of time into it, and it's one of the best racing games around, especially this generation, where that's kind of been lackluster, like one of the genres that has not really come to bear with the increased power of this generation. You guys have Horizon Chase Turbo on yours, so I'm going to have to check that out. As far as like the big time, big budget racing games, they're not really doing it so much this gen. For the Forza games are, this is kind of what you had last gen. It's just prettier. It looks better. It's not really changing anything in any major way. In some ways, it's kind of getting a little worse with like the loot box stuff they're trying to do in there. It's not. It just makes it seem like they're more desperate to wring more money out of people.
That's the My Forza 7 review.
Yeah. Gran Turismo Sport seems like it's probably pretty good. It just seems like it's very much going after the live service kind of thing.
Yep.
Where they're continually adding new content. I think they just added a bunch of new stuff in the past month or so. That means I'll probably end up picking that up at some point, just to see what all is there. But the online mode they have there really sounds cool. Sort of this more hardcore kind of PC racing sim kind of mode, where you're really tested on your sportsmanship, which, as we all know, in online racing games, there is none. you break by just rushing into the cars ahead of you on turns. That's how you take your turns. Burnout Paradise actually kind of gets rid of some of that with its online, where it's a lot of it is cooperative. It's all about doing these fun, stupid challenges and teaming up, which ends up getting the way in some points where people decide, I don't want to do this anymore. And everybody else has done the thing and wait on these idiots and you just want to kick them out so you can get things done. But and other than that, Tesla versus Lovecraft is the 10 tons title that follows in the big lineage they have with Crimson Land, Neon Chrome, Judge, and a couple others. And it's sort of their latest game that is just a really fantastic dual stick shooter that just has like a nice twist to it, where it's you're playing as Tesla and you have angered H.P. Lovecraft. And so he has sent his hordes of monstrous creations at you. And each level you're kind of taking down all these monsters, collecting parts of your sort of Tesla mech. And that's like one of the ways you can take down enemies besides just shooting them, is you get this mech that you can keep going for a good like 15-20 seconds, take down lots of enemies that way. But just trying to manage these crowds so you can get these various upgrades and such and get just shoot all the things. It's a really fun indie game that people really should be checking out. And I think it's been mostly it for 2018 so far. I got a lot of stuff that I'm still in the midst of playing that doesn't make the list just yet, but I get some more time into them, they could definitely make the year-end list. So, how about you, Danrub?
Yeah, I've played six games, or I've played through six games that I actually really liked, but I only realistically see three making my list by the end of the year, but again, who knows? I still haven't played Horizon Chase Turbo or Celeste yet, both of which have been getting rave reviews from people I really respect, so...
I'm not seeing Horizon Chase Turbo's on sale on PSN right now for $18. Till the 3rd.
Okay. Maybe I'll take a look at that. But yeah, so those are two games I really want to check out before really making a decision there. So the three games that I really like, but I don't know if will remain there, are the first one is Detroit Become Human. I don't really hype a David Cage game all that much because I know what to expect with them. And the game really starts off strong, and then it teeters off to a point where it's unbelievable, and then the ending just... Or at least my first ending just didn't really do much to salvage much of my opinion on there. So it's fine for what it is. It's nice visually. It's probably the longest David Cage game there is. But I don't know. It just left a weird taste in my mouth, and I still ended up liking the previous two games better. Then there's also Ni No Kuni 2 Revenant Kingdom. Definitely a fine game. It does a lot of things great. At the same time, it does a lot of things that I wish could be done better, mainly as far as its plot goes. Like, I know that the main character in Ni No Kuni 2 matures a whole lot, whereas in the first game, the main character really doesn't. But I feel like that game had a whole lot more charm. And I can probably credit it due to the fact that it had a lot of actual anime cutscenes, which I really appreciated, which didn't happen in the second game. And even though the first one was turn-based, I thought it was still a whole lot more deep than it was the second time around, because the second time around, the battles were just too easy. So there's that. And then there's also A Way Out, which actually ended up being really impressive. It does a whole lot of things that can really make this a genre worth looking at. Like, at the end of the day, it's a walking simulator, but the fact that it's co-op really leaves a lot to the open mind there. The guy who made it is the same dude who was responsible for Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons, and I feel like the puzzles in that game were actually harder than what they were in A Way Out. So I think if there's a way to blend the difficulty with a third game, then it could definitely be something great. So that comes to my top three, which will probably make my list sometime at the end of the year. There's God of War, which Chris already talked about. You know, it ended up being incredibly story-driven, and the story was actually good. So that totally surprised me, and the gameplay is totally fantastic. Like, at first, I was weirded out by the fact that most of the attacking moves you do are done with the right shoulder buttons, but seeing as how everything is done in one view and one perspective really added to the game's challenge, and it actually really helped as far as its storytelling went. Like, I can't really think of another game that handled storytelling the way that this game does, and the closest comparison I could make would be a lot of the other single-player games that Sony Studios and Naughty Dog have done, so it's a real technical feat as well. Probably this and Horizon Zero Dawn are, like, by far the best-looking games I've played this generation. So, yeah, if God of War came out last year, it definitely would have been in the top three for me. Then there's Dragon Ball FighterZ, which pretty much rejuvenated, like, whatever love I had left for fighting games. I played that for a good long time. I could have platinumed it, but it requires a whole lot of, like, Zenny to be compiled, and I don't have time for that. And, there was a point in time where I had 14 straight wins, and then after that I had 20 straight losses, so that kind of fucked up my psyche there, but you know, it's a whole lot of fun.
Chills is real.
Yeah. It's a whole lot of fun. It's fun to watch. Whenever I see someone pulling it at work, I stop what I'm doing and end up joining them for a few rounds. Not a lot of games have been able to do that in my life, so totally thankful for it. And yeah, it actually makes me want to watch Super. And the reason why I haven't watched it is because the first few seasons or whatever are about the movies, which have already been. So I'll eventually get there. And my number one for right now is Monster Hunter World.
We all know how involved the Monster Hunter series is, and the fact that they made it approachable to new people, and at the same time getting as much attention as it has, really puts it over the top for me. It made me realize, like, out of all the gaming communities I've been a part of, the Monster Hunter one is probably one of the most inviting. Like, I've never had any issues with people going up. Like, yeah, people are going to go off on their own to get whatever gear they have to get, but at the end of the day, they're all still really, really helpful. I've met quite a few people online who really made me learn the ropes, and at the end of the day, like, it was extremely rewarding. Like, from week, my skill from week two compared to week one was just tremendous, and it's really humbling, you know, just knowing that there's still people out there who really want to help, and this is probably the closest thing I'll get to a real MMO. I don't know if I'll ever really get into one, but this is. Granted, I'm not playing it anymore, but it's definitely something I can see myself jumping back into if there's time. So, yeah.
All right. So, yeah, did you want to chime in on this, Brandon?
The main reason I didn't put anything down is because, honestly, it's still kind of early for me. Mm. I haven't really played anything quite yet that... I mean, I've played plenty of games this year that I've enjoyed, but not ones that I would necessarily declare Game of the Year material just yet.
You're still playing Zelda, right?
I finished Zelda.
Okay.
But, you know... It'll probably be well into autumn before I'm comfortable actually starting to declare something potential Game of the Year material.
Okay, well, we'll check back later.
I mean, for goodness sakes, Octopath Traveler doesn't come out till next month, so...
Yeah, yeah, so worth noting. All right, so I guess we'll end the show there. Yeah, quite a interesting set of topics we went over. Varying set of opinions, as usual. I'd like to remind everybody that if you have not subscribed to the show yet, please do so. You can check us out on iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn, or your favorite podcast aggregator. You can also check us out at smashpad.com, where our written reviews are posted. Hopefully we'll have some more of those soon. So, check that out and yeah, give us a like as it were. With that, I am Filippo D'Onofrio.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Chris Sologi.
And I'm Dan Victoria.
See you in a couple of weeks.